I'd like to start by thanking my supervisor, Chris Buttle, as well as everyone who has helped me in the planning and carrying out of this project, and NSERC for funding. Meta-community theory is a tool for understanding species coexistence and diversity at multiple spatial scales by considering individuals, local communities, and meta-community, which is a set of local communities linked by dispersal of potentially interacting species. Leibold et al. In 2004 put forward four meta-community paradigms, the patch dynamics, species sorting, mass effects, and neutral paradigms, which are a useful framework for asking questions and interpreting evidence about questions of species coexistence and diversity, which I'm very interested in, and my study group is spiders. A central way in which these four paradigms differ is in the relative rates of dispersal and local dynamics. And so in my study, I ask about dispersal rate and mechanism in an old field spider assemblage. Spiders are ecologically interesting because they're important generalist predators in forest and agricultural ecosystems, and they have great potential for biocontrol of pest species in some systems, and their movement in spiders is very interesting because of their ability to disperse using silk, either by ballooning or by spanning. Ballooning is when a spider releases a silk strand, which, when it gets long enough, the spider can let go of the substrate and be carried away on the breeze by the wind. And spanning is when a spider releases a silk thread with a sticky end, which is carried by the wind and then attaches to something, and then the spider can turn around and tighten it and run along that silk thread, using it as a bridge to another structure or piece of vegetation. So my first questions were, what are the rate and mechanism of immigration into local assemblages of foliage-dwelling spiders? And here, this is a diagram of my field site, and so the vegetation consisted of small trees, which were really mostly just about my height, so they really were very small trees, and other non-woody vegetation here, that especially at the peak of the summer was almost the same height as my saplings. So spiders could come into, and I used well-separated individual trees as the local habitat patches that I was considering. And so spiders could move in either cursorially by walking across the ground and up the trunks, or aerially by spanning from either non-woody vegetation or other trees. My field site was located on the island of Montreal in the St. Lawrence River, which is here in North America, and this is a close-up of Montreal. My field site was on the very western tip in the Bois de la Roche Agricultural Park in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And this is a picture of part of my field site, and circled is one of my small trees, so you can see what they looked like. They really were very small. So my design included 70 trees, all of approximately the same height, and the same species, the common buckthorn, Rhamnus cathartica. I divided these into two groups, 35 of which I designated as aerial immigration-only trees by placing a strip of tape 30 centimeters up from the ground around the trunk and coating it with tanglefoot to prevent all arthropod traffic. And 35 trees I allowed cursorial plus aerial immigration by not putting anything on the trunk to prevent arthropod traffic. I then collected all the spiders from each tree every 4 days from May to September in 2007, and I did this by a combination of shaking, beating, and visual inspection. And so what I did was, as you can see, I held this square sheet under the tree, bent the whole tree over, and shook it over the sheet, collected all the spiders, and did that repeatedly until I got no more spiders by shaking. Then I put the sheet down, held the tree, and beat it with a stick, and collected spiders until I got no more spiders. And I followed that up with a visual inspection just to make sure to see if I could see any that I had missed. I'm still identifying my spiders, so I'm just presenting abundance data today. This is a graph of the number of spiders immigrating per meter cubed of foliage per day, plus or minus standard error. You can't see the difference between the treatment groups, so just look at this graph to get an idea of the rate. Along the x-axis we have the month, obviously. The gaps in August and September here, those don't represent immigration rates of zero. Those are dates when I was not able to sample. So what we can see by looking at this graph is that the immigration rate changed throughout the season, peaking in late July and early August. And this peak is coincides with the time when a lot of spider eggs hatch, and so there are tons of really young spiderlings, which move around a lot. And the actual rate calculated ranged from 0.3 to 3.4 spiders per meter cubed per day immigrating into these trees, which is quite significant. If we just look at the first part of this graph, cut it in half and make it larger, we can look at a comparison between my treatment groups. And we can see that on almost every sample date, there was no significant difference between the number of spiders arriving into trees that by aerial immigration only, as compared to by aerial plus cursorial immigration. The two stars represent days when there's a significant difference, and of special interest is this one, because there more spiders arrived into the aerial immigration only trees. I suggest that this is because at the end of May was when my trees were flowering, and the few days right around when my trees flowered, ants swarmed up and down them to visit the flowers, and so it makes sense that more spiders would stay in trees that had less that weren't swarming with ants. But really, there was no difference between the two treatment groups. My second question was, how does abundance, richness, and species composition of spiders immigrating into empty trees compare to that of spiders established in the foliage throughout the season? And this is a diagram of my prediction. I expected that the spider assemblage existing 4 days after spider removal would have fewer individuals and species than previously undisturbed spider assemblages in these trees. So to test this, I just added 35 trees to my design. These were the 70 trees that I was describing before, and then on 4 days throughout the summer, the 10th of June, the 6th of July, the 3rd of August, and the 4th of September, I also collected all the spiders from 35 additional trees from which I had never before collected spiders. I'm just presenting data for the September 4th collection of those 4 days. This is the average spider abundance and richness in all of the groups, and you can see that as predicted, control represents the trees from which I had never before collected spiders. They had more species and higher abundance of individuals than the trees from which I had removed spiders 4 days ago. This is not unexpected and suggests that 4 days was not long enough for the spiders for the spider diversity to come back to normal levels. If we look at composition, here we have mean spider abundance per tree plus or minus standard error along the y-axis, and then the species along the x-axis. You'll see that a lot of these are genus and then spa, because the vast majority of my species, or that my individuals, were juveniles, which can't reliably be identified to species. And then on the top we have the established spider assemblage, and these are the two groups from which I removed spiders every 4 days. So this is kind of like the immigrant composition. So the first thing we can notice that's really interesting is that the two most abundant species in the established assemblage are also the two most abundant in the immigrant composition, which suggests that maybe these are here just because they're moving around in the system a lot anyway, and so they're also moving into the established spider assemblage. The second thing to note is that several species present in the established assemblage are not present in the immigrant composition, including the third and fourth most abundant species, which suggests that these species are dispersal limited, and 4 days was not long enough for them to. And so they're probably in the established assemblage because they arrived there earlier and stayed, and they're not moving around a lot. And the last thing to note about this graph is that no species that were significantly present in the immigrant composition were excluded from the established assemblage. So this suggests, if we had seen that, it would have suggested that spiders were present in the system and moving around that were unable to establish in the trees that were full of spiders because all the niches had been filled and species sorting was occurring. But we didn't see that. So to conclude, about dispersal mechanism, aerial dispersal is clearly very important, since there was no difference in abundance of spiders arriving at trees with and without cursorial dispersal prevented. And spiders as a group are not dispersal limited in the system, since there is a high rate of immigration, even of adults, which is surprising. But several species, individual species present in established assemblages, didn't arrive in empty trees over this time period, indicating that some were dispersal limited, although as a group they weren't. But overall, it's it's very interesting that the amount that spiders are moving around and the importance of aerial immigration. So thank you. I'll answer any questions. The question is, if I don't think 4 days is long enough, what's the next longest period that I'll go to? I'm not sure that I'm going to go to another longest period. I expect that it really depends on the species. Like, for one species, maybe 10 days would be enough. For one, maybe they only move around early in the season, and so it, like, I would have to, like, every year would be long enough. So I'm not going to... That's not where I'm going to go next with this.
There were some spiders trapped in your tanglefoot at the bottom?
The question was, were there spiders trapped in my tanglefoot? Yes. Not as many as I would have expected, but there were some. So
does it add up if you subtract?
No. No, definitely not. Yes.
Do you have any idea about the prey in these trees and how any of the movement that you saw in with the spiders?
The question is, do I have any idea about the prey of the spiders in these trees, and was the movement that I saw related to prey abundance? I did, when I was beating and shaking my trees, knock out a lot of prey items. I didn't notice a difference in the prey items knocked out of trees with the cursorial, with the tanglefoot barriers, so I don't think that there was a difference in prey. Other than that, I'm not sure.